Hey everyone, this is BT, and before we get into this inside the episode, I just wanted to let you know that if you are watching this on the YouTube channel, you're going to notice that David and I are in the studio, and that's because this was recorded before the coronavirus pandemic. So this was David and I in the studio just riffing about his most recent amazing content episode. And we wanted to make sure that you were aware that we are abiding by all the rules and all that stuff. So we hope you're being safe out there. And we, of course, hope that you enjoy this inside the episode. So let's get to it.
Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Welcome to Inside the Episode. David and I are going inside the episode titled Building Your Self-Image. So you're going to want to check this one out for sure. So David, in this episode, you lean heavily on a turn of the century book. And by turn of the century, I mean 1902 is when James Allen, As a Man Thinketh, came out, which, you know, that particular book, it always makes my head hurt a little bit just because of the language that he used. But what I love about it is that you sort of break it down on a level that someone like myself can understand. So I want to start off the episode with the quote from the book, just to kind of give us a jumping off point, and then we'll go from there.
Sure.
And it's a quote that you've said several times in the past, and I always love it, but it does require a little bit of interpretation. So this is James Allen's work. Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes. The tool of thought and shaping what he wills brings forth 1,000 joys, 1,000 ills. He thinks in secret and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. Now, when you came across this book, first of all, when was that? It had to have been early on, I assume. Was it given to you by your mentor, or did you come across it yourself? And what about that quote just kind of hit you between the eyes?
No, so I got it sometime in the 90s. I couldn't tell you when. Probably mid, I would say, somewhere between 94 and 96, I would think, is when I got it first. I heard about the book, and I probably heard it listening to books on cassette tape that I was listening to at the time. A lot of the original books that I got were other authors talking about books that they had read. That's how I found Think and Grow Rich. That's how I found As a Man Thinketh. That's how I found Viktor Frankl. That's how I found all the great original authors of, you know, kind of self-improvement or psychology. I just heard about other people talking about them, and then I went out and I got the book myself. So when I first got the book, I really did not understand what that little poem in the beginning meant. The more I studied, the more I understood a lot of what these concepts were. And you build a relationship in your mind, a cause and effect relationship, like what Allen talks about in this book, between the way you think, your behavior, and what you experience in your outside world. I did something. I'll tell you something I did pretty cool. And I got to find this. I have it somewhere. It might be in my library. It might be in storage someplace. I did a tele seminar one time way back in the day on this book. And what I did with the original copy that I had was I took four different colored markers, and I sat down with, say, a yellow marker, and I went through the book, did not read, just randomly, and then I would highlight a sentence or two sentences with yellow. And I would flip back and forth of the book until I did 20 highlights. Then I took a green marker and did it. Then I took a blue marker and did it. Then I did a purple marker and did the same thing. Then I randomly went through and numbered those colors, right? So I would take the yellow first, and I would go one through 20, but I would flip back and forth, not in any kind of order as you would typically read the book. And I did it with all the colors. Then what I did was I went and I read them in order. So I would start with yellow first, and I would read the first sentence, number one. Then I would look around in the book to find out where was the second one and read the second one. Without exception, all four colors in the order that I did them read as if you had written the book that way. It's the most bizarre thing that I ever saw, that I ever did. And the reason that I did it was because somebody said to me, this is one of the greatest truths that was ever written. And I thought to myself, if it's true, it should line up the same no matter how you read it. So, and this is part of a longer discussion. And part of it was that I was being taught to study in a much different way than I had learned, because my mentor was teaching me to study. Like, we would go through a book like this together and he would just pick out a sentence. And my job was to then really work until I understood the sentence. He's like, the book's not about getting through the whole book. It's about understanding what you do read. So stop reading to get through it and understand what you do read. So as I was doing this and I would flip around, I would notice that one thing seemed like it fit identical with something else. And I wanted to see, if I do this like this, is that really true? Would it line up? And it did. And it was about a year or two that I would occasionally teach this to people. And everybody that went through it like that, they were freaking blown away. They were like, are you sure you didn't? I'm like, no, I'm telling you, do it yourself. Try it yourself. Just take a couple of markers and do it yourself and see what happens. But this book is so true. Like, every sentence in it is 100% dead on. And it doesn't matter how you read it. It reads as if they were meant to go together. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because it's a different way of studying, and it also probably forces you to slow down and to really take it line by line, sentence by sentence, even word by word, and not just to get through it. I think that's why my head usually hurts on episodes like these, because when I start reading that, it just gets jumbled in my head. And rather than stopping, because my subconscious mind is probably saying, you know what, you don't need this nonsense anyways, move it along, I usually do move along just to get through it. You're saying this is the kind of book where you really want to take it really slow and focus in on every single piece and bounce around a little bit from the sounds of it, because truth is truth, right?
Yeah. So, like, here, let me give you an example here. If you take this book, and like I say, in my opinion, it's the greatest book ever written on personal responsibility. This is one sentence, and I read this in the episode. Circumstance does not make the man, it reveals him to himself. So you just take that one sentence, close the book, put the book aside. Go out for a week with that in mind, right? Every circumstance is revealing my innermost thoughts to myself. All of a sudden, you'll be like, holy shit, that's 100% right, right? Like, I am having this circumstance because I believe X, Y, Z. You start to see the correlation between the way you think and believe and the meaning that you give to things to the way that you're perceiving the circumstance. So it's uncanny. And when I think that when a person begins to do that, that's why I say this is the greatest book on responsibility ever written, because this book does something magical when you really get into it, is it allows you to bridge the correlation between the way we've been taught to think and the way the world shows up for us individually. That's when you have the power to begin to change it. When you actually experience that correlation, you're like, fuck, I really do. I am really causing myself to have this experience in life. And then he tells you how to change it, the way you need to think in order to change it.
Yeah, and you're talking about all circumstances. Like, let's say you're on your way to work and you hit every red light, or someone cuts you off in traffic, or you're standing in line at the grocery store and it's taking way too long. Every single one of those circumstances, you are creating it, and there's a lesson in every single one of those that's sort of teaching you, maybe you need to slow down a little bit. Maybe you need to work on your anger. Maybe you need to focus on the positive and bring more of those in. So it's just like, I'm trying to make it real world application. connection to something that was written in 1902, basically.
Well, like you just mentioned part of it. Like, so how many people have had the experience where you need to get somebody in a when you need to get somewhere in a hurry, you get behind every slow fucking driver out there, you hit every goddamn red light that you can, like everything seems to slow you down because getting somewhere in a hurry is based out of fear. So your fear is creating what you don't want to experience. It is a cause set in motion. Yeah. Right.
And you're drawing attention to it too. You're like, God damn, these sons of bitches, they're doing it on, and then it's a conspiracy theory, right?
They're all, yes.
The person is driving very slow just because he knows you need to be somewhere in 10 minutes and you're not going to make it because he's, you know, taking it slow or she's taking it slow.
Yeah, it's exactly.
I still have these conversations with myself.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's like all these people are against me. Why? And then it's victim, right?
Right.
The victimhood that comes with it. I freaking love that. All right. So there were two questions you posed to the listeners in this episode on building your self-image. And they were questions that I don't believe I've ever stopped and really thought about myself. So I'm glad you said them. I'm going to say them again here. What does my life look like and why is it this way? Like when you stop and think about it, not too many people probably do ask themselves those questions.
They
so
don't.
Where does that come from? Like, where did you come up with the idea to say, hey, what does my life look like and why is it the way that it is? I mean, does it come from the book? Does it come from your experiences? Did it come from a mentor? Did it?
I think now it comes from all of the above that you just mentioned. Originally, it came out of the pain of seeing my family go through what they were going through, being taught something completely different in my religious education, and not understanding how the two made any sense to coexist, you know? So my family was in a great amount of pain. There was, and the thing is that their belief system was whacked to start off with. So that was part of the problem, but I didn't know that at the time. As a matter of fact, you and I had a conversation about this around the Mr. Rogers thing that came out. There were huge contradictions between things that I was exposed to in the late 60s, early 70s, and the way that my world was. So I was raised, a lot of people were racist, right? And Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street, The Electric Company, The Big Blue Marble, like all of these PBS shows that were out were basically letting kids know that people of different color and gender and whatever were okay. Like there was no, and it was so different than what I was hearing on a daily basis. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The idea of we were killing each other with Vietnam. We had a corrupt president. They killed Martin Luther King Jr. They killed Bobby Kennedy. There was all the stuff going on with the mafia. Like there was a lot of crap going on. And then you had women's liberation that was happening. And then you had the people that didn't like women's liberation. There was a lot of contradictions going on. And then I'm in my religious school and they're like, God loves everybody. We're created from love. And if we do this, then we're going to heaven. And yet I'm seeing the world doing anything but that. And I was a curious kid. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this makes no sense. Somebody give me an answer. And I couldn't get anybody, not in my family, not at school, not at the church, could I get a straight answer from anybody. So I'm thinking to myself, either this is complete bullshit when I'm learning in church, right? When I'm learning in the Catholic religion, either it's complete, like all of it is either complete bullshit or there's something we don't understand. Now, what I haven't told a lot of people is that I wanted to see what the other religions believed. So I went to probably every other Christian denomination church to experience that, to see what it was. And then I started going to other churches. So like I had friends that were Jewish. I went to synagogue. I had friends that were Hindu. I went there. I started learning as much about other religions as I could. I read all the basic religious texts in the world of the major religions. And I found out that they all pretty much said the same thing. And I read books about those books that had been written that break it down into layman's terms so that you could, you know, kind of understand it. I read all the banned books from the Bible, the ones that were considered to be put in the Bible when it was created, but for whatever reason, they were left out, which are far more interesting in a lot of ways because there's a lot of truth in them, and I just don't think that they wanted people to have that much power. But anyway, I digress. The problem for me was that it caused major, major conflicting questions in my mind that I needed to have answered in my life. Because here's the problem that it left me with, T. I didn't know who to be.
Sure.
I didn't know who to be. I didn't know if I needed to be this racist, angry, fight and cheat for everything person that I was exposed to growing up. Did I need to be like a priest? Something in the middle? Like, I had no idea. I wanted to do the right thing, but I also wanted to succeed in my life. And I didn't know how to do any of it. So I had to have these answers, I had to have these questions answered in a way that I had some idea of how do I even show up in this world and do something. Obviously, the way that I was showing up was not doing me any good. Now, I was never racist. I was never a criminal, really. I never really went down a bad road, although I was around some people that did. And it was close there for a while. Like, it was kind of up in the air as to which direction that I was going to go. But I don't think I would have ever went really too bad down that side. But I had to find out. I mean, so the questions were there from the time I was a little kid because we had a tragedy in our family when I was 4 years old. And that's really, in my opinion, what started spiraling the whole family in a bad direction. Because then it was just like one drama after another for all my life.
Yeah, for sure. Not that I expect you to know the answer to this, but, you know, we are a product of our environment.
Yeah.
And you may be around people that were not particularly nice. Maybe they utter racially insensitive words. Often they're just mean, spiteful, angry people. Yet somehow inside of you, and I'll use me as an example, because I had family members who were like that and who are like that, yet I chose to go a different route. How is it that a person can be in that environment yet still choose a different course? Is it just free will? Like, where did I get that from?
I think people of our generation were exposed to something our parents were not. And like PBS is just one example of that.
100%.
Right? It came into my life at a time prior to 7 years old when my mind was open to a different idea. And it gave me a completely opposite idea of the racism that I was hearing, right?
Sure.
So it caused enough of a question for the ability of that to take root in my mind versus being a racist.
Yeah.
My parents didn't have that. My parents did not have that at all. True. If they were raised in a racist environment, it was 100% racist. And you were degraded if you didn't go along with the racism. So even though I know for a fact they knew better, it doesn't mean that they did better.
Sure. Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. Wow. Not much else to say about that. Speaking of which, you did say in the episode, anybody can change, but it has to start with the core essence of who that person is.
Yeah.
So when a person doesn't want to change or is not ready to change, plain and simple, they won't. If you're trying to get your spouse to change or your friends to change or your family to change, guess what? Newsflash, is not going to happen. They'll change when they want to change, or maybe they won't. It has nothing to do with you.
Right.
But if a person is desiring change, they can do so immediately. What do you say to the person out there who says, well, I want to change, but they usually refer, they end that sentence with but.
They do.
So yeah. So what does that person out there need to hear to get them to the place where it's like, you know what? You can change it. It can happen right now.
So I think that there's a legitimate amount of not, you know, like when a person says, I want to change, but pay real close attention to what comes after the but, because very often it's a legitimate obstacle in the person's mind. If you're conditioned that the only way that you can get ahead is, you know, one way, if you're conditioned that you're not that, you're this, then the obstacle is 100% real, even though you may have no verifiable experience saying that that's 100% true. You were just told that it's true. So you live within the with that reality. And they may say that they want, but they don't actually understand what they have to be willing to push past in order to have that experience. Like I run across this with people that want to be wealthy all the time. They don't know what they don't know. They don't know that they stop, even as much as they think that they're not, they still stop within inside their comfort zone. They don't know that there's another level that they have to push past with themselves in their external work that they're doing that will allow that money to be a windfall in their life. So, and it's very complex. Like they will have all kinds of shame and guilt and wrong and rude and not being kind. And, you know, and all we're talking about is how we communicate, what we ask for. You know, you tell somebody, you sit down and you teach them how to sell. You teach them the ethics of selling to start off with, even if they hear it, but they're taught that salespeople are slimy, that's still running around in their head. Sure. Now you're a slime ball because of what you're doing. You teach them how to ask questions around sensitive topics because the conversation has to take place in order to make the sale. They feel like they're being rude. They feel like they're talking about things that they shouldn't be talking about. They feel like they're intruding into someone's life. So they have to learn to bring some resolve to those emotions and those ideas before they're ever going to get to the place where they have any influence with someone, right? Because otherwise, everything in their body is screaming, you're a piece of shit. You look what you're doing to this person. You're horrible. You can't do this. And they want to run in the other direction. And then if somebody says no, oh my God, it just verifies everything that they're feeling, right? Oh, I'm just so terrible. I'm being rejected now. And they don't know that if they would just go a little bit further, the chances are is that the person that they're having the conversation with would actually meet them with gratitude because you helped that person solve a major issue in their life.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
I mean, that was my experience. I used to get handwritten letters from people that would say, thank you so much for selling me into this. It completely changed my life. And I was shocked. Like I didn't know that was going to happen. I had absolutely no idea. But then you kind of go, I get it. I'm actually doing something good here. But we're all pushing past the ignorance that we're taught in order to get to the truth. And that can be uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah. And it's so very true because, you know, my first role in this company was in sales, believe it or not. I think this is kind of funny. And I wasn't particularly great at it because rejection is a deep wound for me, as well as, you know, I was trying to get something with every single phone call. I wasn't providing the value. So, and I also grew up in a household where, you know, when the church folk would come around knocking on doors and leafleting, we would hide behind the couch so as make it look like no one was around, right?
Right.
So they were selling their religious beliefs.
Yeah.
The car salesman, slimy, like all of those things, as you were talking about, it really hit home with me, which makes it make sense that I wasn't particularly great at sales because of all those things. And that was built on past beliefs that somebody had programmed into me. So I can totally get where in sales, a person could really struggle with that, especially when it comes to rejection. But that simple switch of this is going to help someone, I don't need anything in return other than helping this one person. It's a minor shift that pays big dividends to you. Because once you get past also the fact of what other people think of you, like when you have people make 100 phone calls a day, mm-hmm. and just if they hang up on, either get the sale or get hung up on, that is a scary ass exercise. But I'll tell you what, you make it through the 100, there's nothing that can touch you after that.
No,
I mean, nothing. It's such a brilliant exercise that you tell people at our events. I love that piece. You also said in this episode, which I loved, life happening to you versus life happening because of you. Can you talk a little bit more about that and go a little bit deeper? You know, it's sort of like, you know, we oftentimes think that, especially when things are bad, like, oh, this is negative, negative, negative. Life is just happening to me. You're creating it. Life is happening because of you.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit more about that. I think people will enjoy it.
I think fundamentally, by the way most of us are raised, we're raised reactionary to life. So it starts off with we're ignorant little kids, and we have to be taught how to be safe. We have to be taught how to feed ourselves. We need to be taught how to wipe our ass. We have to be taught to brush our teeth. We have to be taught to go to school, and then why are we going to school? So that we can prepare to get a job, and then, you know, you got to be good because, you know, there's other people that might be better and you could lose the job. And, you know, most of the world that we're raised in is very unsafe. We get a lot of messages, millions of messages before we're adults that we're in an unsafe world. And that the best thing that we can do is prepare ourselves the best that we can and, you know, like kind of hope for the best. It's rare that a parent teaches the child, you're the cause of the world that you're going to experience. So here are all the tools that you need to prepare yourself to be able to do that and to understand how to create that world to go the way that you want it to go for your lifetime. Kids aren't taught that. So it's bad enough that they're not taught that, but it's also the entire community in which you're raised. None of them are taught that. We're all taught that we're reactionary into the world, right? So we all think we're fighting the same freaking monster, but the monster doesn't exist, but everybody believes in it, you know, and that's the world. That's the ideology that we're facing. And of course, we project it on different things, like it's the government or it's this country or, you know, it's the guy down the street or, you know, whatever. And we make up all these little individual monsters to reinforce this unrealistic fear that we have on the inside, this insecurity that we're carrying around in us, so that, you know, we feel safe in numbers. Like there's a camaraderie if we all believe the same bullshit.
If we're all miserable, then we are all on the same team.
We're all on the same team. We're all fighting the same
misery
thing.
Loves company,
it,
I believe.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. But so does wealth and success. It's just with a different crowd. You know what I mean?
It's true. It's
so
a good crowd.
If you're fortunate enough in your formative years to have somebody help establish cause and effect in your mind and teach you how to do it with everything in your life, then you're going to grow up pretty independent with a really good grasp of life, and you're going to go out there and you're going to continue to learn and make it happen for yourself. If you were not raised that way, you have to find it on your own. You have to figure out how to do that on your own. And then that's a process of reprogramming, right? So you have to really think about how you were raised. You have to do a tremendous amount of study to find out what's true and what's not true. And I, you know, in a lot of ways, it's almost a little bit worse than when I first started doing it. Because when I first started doing it, we had the classics that were very clear. Like, this is a very clear book. This is not a wishy-washy book whatsoever. Today, you have a lot of people writing copycat literature where they interject their own unhealed wounds into their writing, which makes it very, like, I don't know what the hell I'm reading. Is this true? Is this not true? The intention with the movie The Secret and the book was a good intention, but they left half of the damn thing out. You know, it was basically think good thoughts, you'll attract good things to you. And there's a lot more to it than that. So on one hand, you can make the argument, well, they opened the door up for a lot of people, but a lot of people also did not continue their study. So, you know, I mean, a person has to be responsible for their own outcome. You have to ask yourself, what am I getting? What am I reading? What am I studying? What is the outcome that I want? And you have to be relentless in the pursuit of that. That's the only way that you can get it. Otherwise, you don't have a choice but to be a victim.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to put people on blast here right now around the fact that if you are blaming other people for your current situation, then you are obviously blaming the wrong person. Because I think what this world lacks right now, and we need to be awakened to the fact that we are responsible for everything in our lives.
Totally.
And this was a shift for me because, I mean, I haven't always been a blamer, but there was points in time when I would look at a current situation and I would go totally fatalistic in that place. It was just my nature. And having someone like you come into my life as a mentor and be able to show me that really you're creating it. And this is hard to hear for people, you know, when you started talking about, you know, children who die from cancer way too soon, or someone who's in a horrific accident and dies, or you lose a love when you start, when you say to people, well, you had a hand in creating this experience. They don't want to hear that. But, you know, it reminds me of like watching, I've been really big into true crime and these horrible atrocities that happen to people. But there's always that one person that forgives the person who did these things mm-hmm. to the family. And rather than carry that around with them, like in your family, you know, you carried around that tragedy for so long. And to some effect, it probably killed a lot of people in your family because they had that heavy burden of losing your cousins. But, you know, when you release that burden and realize that I had a hand in this, it totally shifts everything.
Yeah.
It changes everything. And there's not really a question in this, but I would encourage people out there to realize what the world would be like if we started to accept responsibility for everything in our life, because I don't think a lot of people do. I really don't think a lot of people do.
They don't.
And it's hard. I mean, it sucks when it's long story short, it's easy to point the finger at someone else.
Completely.
It's lazy. It's easy. And
completely.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we do something that is also very dangerous. We look at things that happen in life that are natural occurrences and we say that shouldn't have happened. A child dying at 5 from cancer, that shouldn't have happened, right? So when you do that, people have no idea what they open the door to when they say that. It did happen, and children do die. Children have always died, and like human, like old people and anybody. Things happen outside the natural order of the way we like to think of life, but it still happens. When we go into the idea that it shouldn't have happened, we go into the idea of blaming something. It immediately puts us in that mind frame of blame. It's a painful thing. And I think we need to keep it as it's a painful thing and work through our pain. But when we go into it shouldn't have, number one, we can't change anything.
Right.
But it puts us in the mindset to open up blame. So then we can blame anything that we want. All that does is give us the false feeling of control over something. But eventually, we have to find a way to make peace to it. But how do you make peace with something that shouldn't have happened? Yeah. I mean, you, as long as you keep that position in your head,
you'll never
completely make total peace. Peace comes through acceptance. Now, can we change it going forward? Can we eliminate some of the tragedies? Yeah, we can. We can. But we can't eliminate the destruction of other lives when we go into blame, because it just takes one life down after another.
Right.
Well, and you're right. A lot of people have died because one person died and then
they carry it with
it
them.
Destroyed yeah. them. They emotionally were destroyed. They become addicts. They become abusive. They abuse themselves. Their lives get and it's all because they don't know how to think about it in a healthy way.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I'm not like trying to make people wrong but it's like, look, there's a way to think about things that's healthy, and there's a way to think about things that are unhealthy. Here's another one that this is really horrible. We have this idea that if we don't say it shouldn't have happened, if we don't go into a huge drama around it, that there's some part of us that doesn't care, and that's not true either. We can be deeply sorrowful.
Yeah, sorrow. Yeah.
Why
full
am I
of sorrow.
With that
yeah.
word today.
Yeah.
And yet, not destroy our lives over
right.
it, because there's a healthy way to grieve.
There is, and the healthiest way to grieve is the way you grieve. Like I had this recently with a situation that happened in my family, and I was judging my grief because I wasn't shedding a bunch of tears. I was a little numb, but I wasn't grieving the way I saw other people grieving. And then I tried to force my grief, and Steph had to just sit me down and say, look, be kind to yourself. You grieve this way. Other people, it's not a race. It's not a competition. And I love that you said that, because I needed to hear it today for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, this is not for the faint of heart. Building your own self-image of how you want to be and show up in this world, this is not an easy proposition, but for those that do undertake it, amazing things happen in your life. And I can speak from, you know, my own way of living ever since coming across David, your work, it's totally changed the way I look at things. And it causes me to be more optimistic and less pessimistic. Yeah, and I think that's what people will get out of this episode. So, well, thank you so much for coming inside. This is
great. Great episode, man.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.